Hey, it's John Kamal from 95.9 The Fox. This is the Fairfield County Live and Local Podcast. It's powered by the Sono Collection. My guest today is Jen Durkin. If you're familiar with the New England music scene at all, you've probably heard of her. The lead singer of Deep Banana Blackout, The Bomb Squad, her current band Jen Durkin in the Business. She's played with Bernie Worrell. She's played with Warren Haynes, a bunch of different legends. And she talks about all of that in this episode. It was honestly an awesome conversation. This is another pre-coronavirus episode, so you won't hear us mention the pandemic or anything related to that. But otherwise, yeah, enjoy. It's Jen Durkin, 95.9 The Fox, Fairfield County, live and local.
Does this sound? Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Okay, check.
All right, cool. Yeah, you're coming in good. Yeah, right on. Mm-hmm. All right, yeah. It's Fairfield County, live and local. This is John, powered by 95.9 The Fox. I'm hanging out with local legend Jen Durkin. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude. And you know, I mean, you did an episode of my old show when we called it Black Rock Live and Local, and you had the Business there. Can I just tell you that was the first time I'd had like a big band come in there, because like on the old one I had so like on my old show I would have you know people come in and like you know bring an acoustic guitar and maybe like play a little something like
that's
that.
That's I think what we had talked about
that we
and
had,
then,
to...
and then everybody was like, yeah, let's set up all the gear and do a full on band.
I see like Rich is like pulling out a huge bass cab and I'm like, okay, this is a new thing. This is a brand new thing. Can
that
I say
was
though?
Cool.
That was, it was so cool that I hadn't even thought to do the show that way. And it kind of worked. It weirdly
yeah,
worked.
Because, you know, that's kind of like, you know, we really are a rock band. So for us to strip down, it's just, it's kind of, I mean, we can do it, but, you know, we're a rock band.
Right.
So, you
right.
know, it really is like, and everyone was just excited about it. And, you know, we, our original music, you know, it's very important for us to get it out there. And so when we had opportunity like to play on the radio, we just went for it, you know. And you know, I have a great group of guys, and I feel really blessed to have like a really unique sort of career, because you know, I'm not really a singer-songwriter in the sense that I can't like get on stage and do like a solo and just like play acoustic and sing, or play piano and sing for and do a show just myself like that. You know, and I have done duo stuff, like, you know, some of the songs that I wrote back in the when I first started writing songs.
Yeah.
I could take you all the way back to the very
beginning. Sure. And we will.
Yeah.
But that is a constant throughout your career that I've certainly noticed, that anyone who's followed your music is it's always band, it's always a big band.
Yeah.
Even if it's not technically like a large number of people, it's a big sound.
Yeah.
Like, and your voice is a big sound. And that's well, anyway, here, so hold on. Before I get ahead of myself. So, you know, if you've heard the name Jen Durkin, you probably know her from Deep Banana Blackout. Fairfield County, you know, legends. If you were, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, you know them, you love them. Bomb Squad, which Bomb Squad hits such a weird time, because when you look online for them, first of all, there's the hip hop producers now, which is the Bomb Squad. This is not that Squad.
That's true.
But
yeah.
But also, you guys were like just before social media really blew up, and like there was like iTunes wasn't really like the way to
right.
get music yet.
Right.
So it's tough, like, because I couldn't find anything on iTunes.
Yep.
But it's awesome. If you find, you know, Bomb Squad CD, just local CD, buy it, because it's awesome. It's a great, it was just a great band. I mean, you guys won an AMA.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean.
We were a big band, and, you know, not a lot of bands go out like that. You know, they're, you know, and especially when we started to, you know, what happened was we got voted into that. On the internet, it was a friend and a fan of ours submitted us, unbeknownst to us, that for this you know, award that was going to be an online vote. So we didn't realize until we were in the top 50 that in the country that we were even like on this website, and basically people were listening to like two or three songs and then voting on who they thought was the best band.
That's crazy.
And then, so out of those 50, then we made it into the top 10, and they invited us out to Hollywood to perform at the Knitting Factory out in Los Angeles. And there were 10 bands. We each got to play two songs. And we just got up there and we were the biggest band there.
That's
and,
nice.
Because we had the three-piece horn section. And great, it was a great rock band with killing horns.
Yeah.
And, the judges for this now were LA disc jockeys and managers of like the Flaming Lips.
Okay, so there was an additional component of that, because I was honestly about to be like, wow, they just left that they give away American Music Awards like just based on an online vote. That's kind of awesome.
The top 10 with the online vote.
But top 10 gets whittled
right,
down.
Right, and then we got into the top 3.
Yeah.
That panel voted us into the top 3, and then we performed, the top 3 bands got to perform in New York City at the Knitting Factory.
Wow.
For Dick Clark and for, I can't remember who it was, some New York management and disc jockeys, some New York guys. And it was kind of a blur the whole night because we were a New York band.
Yeah.
We were, I was living in Brooklyn at the time, we were like we were a New York band. So we clearly... The other bands were from LA and Boston, where the other bands were from.
Okay.
But we had the audience,
No, naturally.
But Dick Clark just couldn't believe our sound. He said, I haven't really seen anything like this since Chicago, the band Chicago.
That's great.
And we were like, wow,
That's really great.
We were so psyched and, we got to play right after Metallica. Yeah,
nice.
Jimmy Kimmel introduced us like, oh, this might be the biggest mistake we ever made, but we're putting an unsigned band on after Metallica.
Well, that's the funny part. And I mean, it was the AMA for best unsigned band.
Right.
And I'm sitting there thinking like, well, wait, hold on. Like, don't give him an AMA, man. Give him a good record deal. Like,
right?
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I guess they figured that it was going to open doors for us. And,
sure.
We went to the after party and I came out of there with a stack of business cards like that,
mm-hmm.
From record labels all over the country.
Yeah.
And the ones that were the most interesting to me was this like one label out of Detroit that was a hip hop label. And I was like, really? We're not really hip hop.
Right.
I didn't think that, how's that going to work? But they said, honestly, we're 75% of the hip hop audience also is really into like James Brown and,
I was going to say the R&B connection is going to make that. Yeah,
they get sampled from that. So I was like, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense. And I remember like Tupac's estate lawyer approached us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was just, we met a lot of really interesting people, but nothing really panned out for us. So we remain to the end of our time.
The best unsigned
band. An unsigned band.
Of 2000 and what was that, like 2004?
Yeah, and then they discontinued that award after we were the last people to get that.
Well, then you guys are forever and always the best unsigned band.
Kind of starting to feel like the queen of the underground.
Well, you are. You are. And you know what? I mean, so let's kind of break this down, band by band. That's how, you see my notes. I've just got just an individual, because you've been all around, particularly in Fairfield County. And of course, this is, it's 95.9 The Fox, Fairfield County Rocks, Fairfield County Live and Local. That's what I want to focus on. So,
I grew up listening to The Fox. I'm from Fairfield.
Well, thank you.
And it was The Fox, and it was WPLJ mm-hmm. and PLR.
A lot of Peter Bush. Shout out to Peter Bush.
Yeah. Hallelujah. Absolutely. And
I got to party with Peter the other night. That
nice.
Was a good time. Yeah, he's a great guy.
But I was all about, I discovered, Zeppelin and Hendrix in the 80s. We moved here in 1980 to mm-hmm. Fairfield County, and I was in, Tomlinson High School in Fairfield. And by the time I got into Ludlow High School in Fairfield, I joined a band and we were playing Pat Benatar and The Police we did a lot of different bands. Our first show that we played at the high school was called the Spring Jam. It was a battle of the bands.
Yep.
And from there I met, another band that I joined that were some older guys that, their guitar player was like in his 20s, he was like a guitar teacher.
Yeah.
And they played Rush and all the really just rhythmically challenging stuff. We played Yes and progressive rock. And, it was really cool because, a lot of those voices, were in higher, you know, in the higher notes, in the higher register. And, you know, so I had an opportunity to, very young, sing with really loud electric bands. So at age 14, I've been in somebody's basement singing rock tunes.
That had to, right, and singing through, you know, singing through a terrible PA trying to get above a drum kit in a small room with low ceilings. Yeah. And that, I mean, that's been representative of the sound, the sounds that you've been associated with since. So, like, so Deep Banana, that's the first big, you know, project, and probably the thing that you're most well known for in the
first original band I was in. I was in cover bands up until that point.
And now you're out of college at this point when you joined Deep Banana, correct?
I went to Berklee College of Music in the late 80s, and I, you know, kind of was a fish out of water after that. I really didn't know what to do with myself. I wasn't really feeling the pop music of the day. It was kind of felt like maybe I had made the wrong choice. You know, I thought that I didn't know if I was going to really be able to make it in the music business, you know, because it had changed so much from the music that I was still into. It was like 70s and R&B and funk and soul and rock.
Was there a time when you were thinking of just going the contemporary contemporary route, and like, you know, just trying to like just get into a studio, just meet, hook up with some songwriters, kind of go that female solo artist direction? Was that your thought process at any point?
Not really.
No.
I really was into going around to local clubs and singing with blues bands.
Okay.
So I was really into, and that's when I started really getting into Aretha. And I would, you know, get the guys that, you know, their show is basically like the Triple Threat Blues Band. They were guys I went to high school with.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I would sit in with them from time to time. Then I met another band called Red One, and they were doing a lot of Allman Brothers and Grateful Dead. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we started getting into playing the Janis tunes. Mm. So, you know, then I was in that psychedelic rock world of covers that I really felt very much like comfortable with, that playing biker parties and and local bars and stuff like that.
Well, and but, Deep Banana really kind of is a fusion of those kind of disparate sounds, you know what I mean? Like the big, you know, big band heavy funk influence, but throw extended jams in there that wouldn't be out of place at, like, you know, for a fan of the Allman Brothers, you know.
Totally.
Certainly on the modern jam scene now.
Oh, totally.
I mean, like,
well,
you know,
it was really cool how it happened, because it really grew up on the live scene, and at Fairfield Avenue, where there's all those bars.
Yep.
You know, we were playing there, and, you know, when I was in the band Red One, we opened up for a band called Tongue and Groove, and we did like this rainforest benefit. That was like the big thing back then, was to, like, you know, save the rainforest.
Do you remember what the venue was?
Yeah, it was called Kelly's, and the old sandbar, you know, on it was like called Sandbar back in the 80s.
Oh, is that the one? Yeah, okay, yeah.
Now
I think a couple blocks down.
Next to Stoked.
Next to Stoked. Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, so, all right. So in the Fairfield direction, right on.
Exactly,
right
exactly.
On.
So that night was a big night for me, because not only did I play with Red One, and we did some of my original music in that band. Mm-hmm. Like, they wanted to do, you know, originals as well as the, you know, Almonds and the Dead and stuff. And they, and Flying Burrito Brothers, they had a lot of cool, different stuff that they did. And, you
so
know,
very, very, a lot of 60s stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're getting Flying Burrito Brothers in there.
Yeah, I mean, I really am steeped in such a deep, like, classic rock blues tradition, really,
right,
at this point. But the band that we opened up for was called Tongue and Groove. And they had brass, and they played Maceo Parker, James Brown, Chaka Khan, funky soul music, you know, Stevie Wonder. And that was the music of my childhood.
Yep.
So that was even more kind of like going back to my roots for that. So then I started singing with those guys.
And that was Rob, and that was Volo, and all of those dudes.
Rob Somerville?
Yeah.
Yep. And Ben Carr
from
was
Kung
on bass.
Kung Fu and many other incredible projects. Sorry,
right.
But yeah, continue.
That's right.
Yep.
And Bench, Lefevre we call him now, but his name is Ben Carr, and he is the bass player, and Eric Kalb on the drums. Yeah. In Tongue and Groove during that time. And my really great friend, Andrew Grohmiller, was the lead singer at the time. And then he moved to Montana, and the band wanted to continue on.
Right.
And I stepped out from being a backup singer to being the lead singer.
Okay.
So that was great. And then I moved into New York City, and I started working at SOBs, which is Sounds of Brazil.
So band's not fully together yet. You've jammed with these guys. You know each other.
You're on
each other's radar, and you've jammed as a cover band, but it hasn't formed yet. Okay, sorry. Yeah, continue.
Yeah, so when I was living in New York City, then I really got focused on wanting to write original music and not do the cover thing so much anymore.
Yeah.
And I was getting like really a great exposure working at SOBs because, you know, every night I would do the guest list. You know, my job was to, you know, put people on the guest list. So, you know, I was doing favors for a lot of people, and then I could go anywhere in New York City and get on the guest list because, you know, all the clubs, they all know each other. And I worked for Larry Gold, and, you know, he was a very big promoter. He promoted a lot of shows at Irving Plaza and Manhattan Center. So I got to work on the other side of the industry for a while while I was working on songwriting. And I had just really kind of like got to the point where I really wanted to make it happen. And the only way I could was to move out of New York City and back into the, you know, suburbs kind of. And I called the guys up that I had met in Tongue and Groove and said, you know, hey, I'm putting this new thing together, and it's going to kind of be like Tongue and Groove, and it's called Back to Funk. So it's going to be like an old school funk project.
Okay.
We're going to do, you know, James Brown, Sly and the Family Stone, and kind of some of the stuff we were doing in Tongue and Groove, only this band is going to have some original music as well.
So it was you who made the initial call and kind of got everybody, and you started to collect the troops a little bit.
So Eric Kalb, you know, used to come into the city all the time and play with his, he had like a rock trio called Think Tank with Fuzzy.
Yeah.
Fuzz, we call him now. But back in the day, you know, that's how I met Fuzz.
Yeah.
Was, you know,
guitar player from Deep Banana Blackout.
Right, right. And so then we got Ben involved, and then Rob Somerville got involved, and it just kind of blossomed from there.
Yeah.
You know, then we got, you know, a great keyboardist, Cy Madden, joined the band, and then we were playing all up and down the Connecticut coast and Long Island.
Mm.
I mean, we'd play all the way out in Montauk, we'd play Fire Island, we'd play everywhere in between because, you know, Kalb and Fuzz were from Long Island, so they booked a lot of shows out there with the people they knew, and me and Ben would book the shows here in Connecticut with the people that we knew.
Right.
So we were like between Hartford and Long Island. I mean, we were just constantly.
You're like the Roman Empire with the Mediterranean, but
exactly.
The Long Island sound just taking the whole thing over.
Yeah. And then by the time we started playing New York City, now, you know, New York is famous for being a place where they have five bands play and the audience changes over and it's like 20 people and then they leave. 20 people and they leave. Like,
yeah.
No. When we started playing in New York City, we played at the Wetlands. It was like our crowd would just come out in droves from Connecticut and Long Island, and we would have a couple hundred people in there, and then they
stayed put.
You know, the Wetlands really just kind of like became like a residency for us practically.
Yeah.
And then we had some really cool opportunities where they allowed us to, you know, because Pete Shapiro, he always had a great fondness of our manager at the time, Bob Kennedy. They had this great fondness for wanting to bring the old school, the guys to, you know, the OGs to come and play with these younger jam bands. So they had this brilliant idea to have this thing called the Boot Camp. And Deep Bananas, we hosted it, and we had like Clyde Stubblefield, the original drummer.
Really?
James Brown, Fred Wesley, trombone player with James Brown, and Butch Trucks of the Allman Brothers.
Wow.
And that's where actually we met Butch, and he loved the band so much that he eventually ended up offering us a record deal on his Frog Wings label.
Wow.
Back in the day. Yeah. So, we had a really great, you know, time doing all of that. And it kind of gave us, you know, by the time we started going out around the country and playing gigs, we had killer opportunities to open up for, you know, Government Mule.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like the first time we played out in California, you know, we played at the Fillmore opening up for the Mule and you know, Greg Allman sat in and, you know, and it was crazy because
Greg Allman sat in with you guys?
No, with Government Mule.
Oh, sorry, with Mule. Yeah.
You know, he was there.
But he's there.
And like Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes was there. And it was just like, oh, wow, this is really happening, you know?
Now, what's the turnaround on that? Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, because What's the turnaround on you guys? You kind of get everyone together. You start doing this.
That was 95.
Right, but I'm saying from just, you know, doing these shows back and forth through Montauk, Bridgeport, Fairfield County kind of thing, between that, how long did that jump from doing the local shows to doing the nationwide touring?
3 years.
Mm-hmm. 3 years. Okay. Yeah. And just as was it a gradual thing, or was there
gradual.
A moment where
we
all of a sudden,
going,
yeah.
We started going to Colorado first.
Okay.
Because we just, there's a huge connection between Connecticut and Colorado.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And yeah. And it and the, that was true back in the 90s as well. And then we also used to love to go to the New Orleans Jazz Festival.
Right.
So we were just, you know, our booking agent was from Colorado. So, you know, we would get all these good shows out there, and then we'd get good shows to get, you know, like gig like fraternity parties and stuff. And all the colleges all the way
so
down
to
NOLA.
So you'd make a little,
yeah.
like just a run out of it, stopping
yeah.
at all the college towns around the way, along the way, playing keg
yeah.
parties and stuff like that.
And we would be like out sometimes for 5 weeks at a time. We had two vans on the road, and, you know, it was really sleeping
sound like
on the floor. And
oh, my God.
It was tough.
Sounds...
Honestly, we really,
no,
I
was being sarcastic. That sounds amazing.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. But
it was, you know, that was the time we realized it too, that we were just like living the dream
yeah.
at that point, you know, and we were just like, yeah, whatever we got to do, you know, we'll do it, because we're a big band. And, you know, there was, in the beginning, there's not a lot of money to go around, but we, yeah. you know, we made it happen. You know, we had, you know, my brother's on the road, percussionist. So all of us all together, eight of us.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a lot of mouths to feed on the road. And a lot of hotel rooms and stuff like that. So we couldn't always afford that. You know, sometimes it would just be like, hey, let's crash at this frat dude's house.
Well, that,
you know?
Was, I mean, that
was which
was
kind of a nightmare for me, but being the only girl.
Yeah, that's got to be scary. That's got to be scary.
But, you know, I kind of.
Surrounded by a very solid crew of guys.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I never was in any danger. I just, you know, the smells, the sights, you know.
It's just not pleasant to be around.
Craziness, yeah.
Right.
And anytime there would ever be any girls, I'd be like, I'm going to go hang out with these girls over here.
Yeah.
Just to get a little break from the...
Oh, my God. Yeah, because that's got to be a lot of testosterone. And you're stuck in a van with these guys. They're eating, you know, the burritos from the gas station and everything like that.
Oh, yeah, Taco Hell.
So it's not,
right,
Taco
yeah.
Hell, yep. A lot of taco smell.
Exactly.
Can I say, by the way, I love the selection of music that you sent me, like,
because oh, really?
I like the individual songs that you
yeah.
chose. You know, I mean, you know, the Palico, it's, you know, more of a New Orleans groove. You mentioned
yes,
the New Orleans
yes.
thing.
Well, that we were very influenced by New Orleans. We
yeah.
went to the jazz festival and played in the quarter like 10 years in a row
mm-hmm.
from 95
just,
to 2005.
Just on the street.
No, we'd play, you know, the clubs.
Or just the clubs.
Little clubs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We never actually got to play at the festival, but at night in the, you know, the clubs in the quarter,
yeah.
like the Blue Nile and Cafe Brazil, places like that.
But what I loved the most was
Howlin' Wolf.
No, well, oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, of course.
That's a fantastic.
Forget that.
That's,
Tipitinas.
But Sending Me Tug, like, cracked me up, because this is what I love about you is how little ego you have about the whole thing. Like, you do, though. Like, I mean, it's just like, and like, you know, talking to you, and when I went, like, the first time I sat in with a project that you were involved with was like, God, I mean, it's got to be 6 years ago. I was around musicians that were far outside my capabilities, but you don't care. You're like, yeah, let's jam, let's hang out, let's do this. And what I loved about you sending me Tug was you send me a song, you know, listen, you invite a singer to come on and talk about herself or himself, whoever, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you expect it to be a song that features. No, you send me a song that has a 2-minute bass solo right in the very beginning. Like, if that's not lack of ego, then I don't know what is. I love that. That was just so very you. I was just noticing it. And I was like, well, Ben's just going to stop playing after like 10 seconds. Oh, no, he's not. Oh, no, he's not. Oh no! This is his 5-minute take the time solo in the beginning. That's what's happening here. Now I get it.
Well, I also what I love about Tug, it's a live version
yes.
from the Vibes.
Yeah,
and you know, it's really, for me, it's vocally a great song.
Well, it's
you know
a,
I mean?
It's,
like,
it's a
it
great.
It really
it's,
shows
it's,
my power. That song,
and yeah. it also is an yeah. excellent excuse to tell people to get their ass on the dance floor.
Exactly,
it's a, which is exactly what you want. Solid opener, I'd imagine.
Right. Well, that's what we want. A maximum, you know, R&B, full octane, you know, funk rock. And I feel like Tug really kind of embodied that. But I also love the the side of Deep Banana that was very, you know, New Orleans brass funk kind of, you know.
But you're so willing to let the band go off in a certain direction.
Yeah.
And you don't do the step off to the side, you know, the thing. No, you're right up there the entire time, spinning, smacking the cowbell and everything like that. What I love is that you're very about the band.
Yes.
You're not about Jen Durkin, you're about the project.
Well, I really, you know, I really love Eric Kalb. He and I were married briefly.
Right.
And I, you know, honestly, that whole band was about what a great drummer he was, honestly, for me. And, you know, I still think he's probably the best drummer I've ever played with. And I've played with some great drummers.
Yes, you have.
And
but
he's honestly
also
the best.
Yeah.
Eric, if you're listening, you're the best.
You
and,
are the
But he makes everybody dance.
Yes.
You know? And that's why, you know, like a lot of people go see jam bands and it's, you know, everybody standing around.
Right.
Or it's just like they're really, you know, crazy people doing the whole.
Doing the drug shuffle. Sure. Yeah.
What do they call that? The kelper or whatever. You know, he really made everybody dance. That was his mission and goal, you know. And that comes from the years and years that we played in clubs together playing covers.
Right.
And playing weddings and stuff like that. You know, he really knows how to get people dancing.
Yeah.
And he really plays for the song, too, you know, and that's what I love about his playing. And then everybody in the band really had that same attitude.
Well, that's
they played for the song.
And
they
that's what I'm
for the
that's
right,
that's that like that's band. What that's what I'm saying about you. And it's rare to have a singer and even just the soloists in the band who are all just virtuosos in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
All coming together for a common cause. There didn't seem to be a ton. There isn't a ton of ego. Maybe personally there was, but like on the stage, you never got that.
Well,
vibe.
You know, we never
got that vibe.
We just would never allow each other to be egotistical. We would just totally bust on each other like so hardcore. You know, like somebody took an extra long, you know, solo.
Yeah.
They would just you'd hear about it for the next couple of days. You
really needed that extra minute, huh? You really just you had to go there. It was important to you that you got.
Well, you know,
it
was so
that.
Funny because we listened to we made DAC recordings of every show practically. We had this most excellent tour manager named E, and he just like he drove the van, he did the front of house sound, and he always made sure to record the show on his great, you know, DAT player, like a board recording.
Mm-hmm.
So we would ride around the van like the whole next day listening to the show from the night before. And I think that's how we really wrote our music because we were listening back to it all the time, you know, and tweaking it and talking about it. And we just like lived that music.
That's how you get good
for
right
years.
There, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that way, you know, we would just no one really was allowed to become egotistical because we just made so much fun of other people that, you know, that we would meet maybe out on the road or see other bands or whatever, and we would just bust on them so hard that, you know, everybody realized that, like,
if you do that,
you're not really going to get away with it.
Right.
Everybody just busts on each other mercilessly.
Right. Well, and that's such a thing between, like, between band members, but between other bands on the scene, you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, when you're, like, by yourself, you're always like, yeah, but we're like... We rip on those guys, though. Like, you know, those guys are cool, but we're secretly, we always know that we're the better band.
Well, you know, guys are way more competitive than women are. I mean, I've found.
Sure.
And, you know, so for me, it was all good fun, you know. But I think these guys were extremely competitive, which was great because they're always kind of raising the bar.
That's true.
As far as, like, you know, wanting to be the best and wanting to really feel like, you know, we earned that, you know. So that's why when we got to play with some of these guys that were like legendary, you know, they were like looking at us like, whoa, hey, you know, like Michael Ray from Cool and the Gang, the trumpet player, he was in our band. He did two tours with us.
Did he really?
He joined our band.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, here's this legendary cat from Cool and the Gang.
Yeah.
Right? And he's like on the road with us. I remember just a few times just being like, this is just incredible that you're here. And he's like, well, you guys are great.
Well, and speaking of.
He really gave us so many props, you know?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Well, and speaking of legendary players, so, you know, post Deep Banana, you do this tour with Bernie Worrell.
Right, right.
And so, I mean, you know, and without getting into, because bands end and there's always a whole bunch of stuff. How did the Bernie Worrell thing come about?
Well, one of the many times that we opened up for Government Mule.
Yeah.
Bernie was playing with the Mule.
Okay.
And, you know, I was a big fan of Bernie's. And when I was living in New York and working at SOBs, I was always going to his shows. Mm-hmm. He would play with like Jeff Bum, the bass player from Funkadelic, and so I saw him once with the
Bernie Worrell. By the way, if you don't know who he is, also a former member of Funkadelic.
Right, he was a founding member.
Right.
He was the keyboard player for Funkadelic, which is Eddie Hazel and Tiki Fullwood, and he back like you know when George was doing the Parliaments.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie had Funkadelic, and then they merged it and became Parliament Funkadelic. And it was really exciting for me because, you know, when I got on the road with Bernie, well, let me take it back to where
sure.
we met. So, you know, we were playing this show, and it was like one of the last times I ever saw Alan Woody before he passed away, the bass player for Government Mule.
Mm.
You know, Bernie was backstage with his wife, Judy, who was also the manager of the Woo Warriors, which was Bernie's, you know, band. And they were just talking to me after the show. They were like, you know, we're just talking about touring.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, 8-piece band on the road, it's a lot, you know, and, you know, it's been tough. And I said, I'm looking to do some other things because, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and, you know, I kind of like to branch out and do some new stuff.
Sure.
So I said, I'm kind of taking a break from Deep Banana, and then they called me up and were like, hey, while you're on your break, you want to, you know, come and do some stuff? And I was like, yeah, that's exactly why I'm taking
right
a break,
on,
because
yeah.
I wanted to do stuff like this, you know?
Yep.
And I just, you know, opportunities like that, you know, to play with different people. Rich Zerkowski, who's in my current band now, mm-hmm. We've been friends for many years. So back, even during that time when I was in Bernie's band, which is like around 2000, 2001 to, I was in the band from 2000 to 2002.
Okay.
For 2 years I was in Bernie's band. But I also did recordings with Jason Jones and Rich Zerkowski. They had a band called Electric Hill that used to open up for Deep Nan all the time. So I was good friends with him and Jason. And
I didn't
we
know
were
you knew Rich
songs.
from back then. Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, we've
yeah.
been friends for a long time. So, yeah, so and there was just a ton of people in the music scene that I had met on the road and stuff that I just, you know, I wanted to kind of get branch out and do more things. But, you know, Deep Banana wanted to keep doing what they wanted to do. So at a certain point, I was like, well, you know, just get another singer and, you know, I'll do my thing. And, you know,
just
so
get another singer, she says.
Well, you know, I kind of felt like we were just like a full on band. You know, we were Deep Banana Black and it wasn't Gender Kananda.
Yeah.
You know?
No, yeah.
So I felt like, you know, that would work and that would be good for them. And they did. They got a great singer. And she also was a multi-instrumentalist. Hope
Saxophone player, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hope Claiborne. And she was great. And she also wrote songs, too. And, you know, she was in a band from North Carolina called Bob is Seth. And we had played with them a bunch on tour. So at this point, you know, I was just the world was just of jam band was just amazingly open for me because there's, you know, not a whole lot of, like, just singers in the jam band scene. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Most of the people in the jam band scene were, you know, guitar players or keyboard players or, you know, and they would, so it wasn't like, you know, there weren't a whole lot of people like me in the jam band
yeah.
scene. So
well,
it got to be kind of unique, so
and,
it was fun.
And there kind of still aren't,
yeah.
you know? I mean, it really, it's a very, it's very,
very
focused
unique.
On
yeah.
instrumentalists.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean by when I say I've had, like, a really, really unique career because, you know, it got to the point where, you know, when I was playing with the Bomb Squad and, you know, we had won the American Music Award like a year before and things were kind of not panning out.
Yeah.
And people were getting kind of like, what are we doing?
Why do you
know,
think that is?
That well, we just we're a big band, you know,
right.
like and unfortunately, I hate to say it, but it's because Dick Clark had his stroke. Had he not had his stroke, I think he was getting ready to really
put some energy behind you guys.
Yeah. And that's really all it would have all we needed because we had great songs. We just needed somebody in the business who was going to, you know, plug us into, you know, New Year's Rockin' Eve or something.
Yeah.
something that would
put you on Madison
really,
Square Garden. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right underneath my,
exactly.
And
it was very sad because it was literally 2 months after that American Music Awards show.
Gosh.
And it was just heartbreaking. What a sad, awful thing that was. And I felt bad for, you know, I feel bad for even saying that, but, you know,
no,
things might have been different.
I get it. I get it, though. No, and that does.
Yeah.
It's funny because when you mentioned earlier at the beginning of this thing, when you were like, oh yeah, and Dick Clark was a big fan. I was sitting there trying to do math in my head. I was like, when did Dick Clark have a stroke? When did that, when did that go down? And now, okay. All right. So that makes, makes total sense. Well, I mean, it's
so, I mean, so everything was cool, insofar as, I loved the music.
Yeah.
And we played like the Montreal Jazz Festival to like 30,000 people, mm-hmm. an all original set. We played between Dr. John and the Funky Meters.
That's great.
At the Montreal Jazz Festival with the Bomb Squad. That to me was like, wow. And we got that gig because they had seen us on the American Music Awards. So, it was a good last year with them. But I was feeling like, I had two kids at this point.
Yeah.
And my son was, only a few months old. And I had a three-year-old. And I just thought, I don't think I can do these late nights anymore. I can't really do it like I used to.
Sure.
And my kids really deserve to have their mother like full time.
Of course.
So I pretty much told the band, gee, I'm really sorry, but I got to like focus on my family and just being around for them. And I can't do this anymore. I was feeling really torn about it, but the money was just no good. And it was a hard decision. But not literally 5 days later, I got a call from Mickey Hart's management. That the vocalist that was supposed to go and do a tour with them had backed out at the last minute.
Oh, wow.
And they literally had a week to find someone to do, 28 days, all across the country, starting in, Jersey, and then gigging all the way out to Las Vegas for this big Vegas, the Halloween.
Okay.
The Halloween festival that they had out there.
Money probably a little bit better on the Mickey Hart tour.
Well, I was I was astonished, honestly, that I guess the manager's wife was a fan of mine.
Okay.
And that was the first person that, jumped into their heads to call to see if I could do this. And, and going back to my days from, being in Red One, and I knew plenty of Dead tunes, enough to jump on a phone call with Mickey Hart and being like, oh, yeah, I'm your girl. I can do this. Meanwhile, I was like, can I do this? I said, listen, I got a 10-month-old. I got to bring him on the road with me, and he's going to need a nanny.
Yeah.
So if you can make that happen, we can do this.
Wow.
And so, yeah.
They were able to make that happen?
My baby boy my sister took my daughter out in Arizona.
Sure.
And I had my little baby boy, Shawnee, with me in the playpen in the back of the tour bus. And, boy, they treated us like family.
That's
Bill
right.
Kreutzmann. Meeting him was just like, there's no words really when you meet people that are just legendary that I've been to so many Dead shows, and it was like crazy that I'm in the room with these guys and we're like rehearsing and stuff. And at the time, the Rhythm Devils, which is their band, Mickey and Billy's band, had Steve Kimmock on guitar and Mike Gordon on bass.
Really?
Yes.
They had Mike Gordon on bass?
Mike Gordon was on the bass, yes.
Mike Gordon from Fish, for those of you who are wondering.
Yes.
Wow.
It was extraordinary to be a part of something like that. I mean, with such a group of all-stars, Steve is like the Jerry Garcia protege and just an excellent person. And they really, talk about humble, you know what I mean? Like, these guys were not acting like, they were the greatest in the world. They were just real musicians playing for the music. Again, I felt very, they treated me like family. I don't know what else to say. They treated me so well, and so did Bernie and his whole band. They all treated me, like I was one of them, even though I was like, the youngest person and probably the least sort of,
Well, but you are one of them. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, it's a community. Musicians are a community. I mean, mm-hmm. whether it's on that level or even like, here just in, within that Black Rock community. People, if you can play.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, if you can play, you can come hang out. And that's all good. Now, I don't want to neglect your current band, The Business. And also, I mean, like, what other? I mean, because you got Steal Your Funk going on right now to try to bring it back to the local,
the modern day.
Right. So what's going on with The Business right now?
Well, The Business is working on our second album,
okay,
and we've got like 7 songs ready to record, and that's gonna happen pretty soon. Sweet. It's just it's a juggling act because we all are. you know, teaching and working day jobs. And, you know, it's just hard to find time for original music.
Yes.
And Steal Your Funk is a, basically a cover band. It's a nice opportunity to blend both of my worlds of, like, Grateful Dead and funk.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Steal Your Funk is. It's like we do a bunch of Dead tunes. We do a bunch of, you know, P-Funk and Sly and the Family Stone, you know. And yeah, we just sort of mush them together.
Yeah. Well, and I mean,
fun tribute band. Yeah.
I feel bad, and I because the story, I love the story of the business, and we don't have time to get into it right now. But like, but if you want to hear more about that band, check out Black Rock Live and Locals, the predecessor to this show. It's on iTunes. Just look that up, and it's right there. Because you guys, I mean, showed me such a good time, but also are just so much fun live. And it does. It's a smaller band for you.
Yeah.
It's still five guys, mm-hmm, but it's yeah, five. But
just
like,
no horns. Yeah,
just no horns.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
You know, and we always said when we have the money, we're gonna have horns, and we actually do quite frequently. When we do weddings and when we do like big festival shows, like we did
You'll bring like a three piece in?
Well, yeah, and it's usually John Blank and Cassidy
Abbott.
Yeah.
No, wait.
Last name's changed.
Hurley. Hurley, there it is. Sorry, Cass. Sorry.
Took me a minute.
Yeah, no, I know. I had to remember that too.
But yeah, so then we all last summer we were doing like a big Woodstock tribute. So we would do like all the stuff from the Woodstock soundtrack.
Saw that
50th
anniversary. Black Rock Day, yeah.
And that was one of those shows where we, you know, had enough money to have the horns.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were incredible. So we could do all those really, you know, slamming like, you know, Blood, Sweat, and Tears and Sly and the Family Stone and Janis tunes. Because, you know, Janis, when she performed at Woodstock, she had the Full Tilt Boogie Band and she had the horns.
Yeah.
And they were fantastic. They just killed it.
And that was a great set too.
And then we would, you know, seed in our originals in the middle of those tunes too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of the way that Deep Banana did it back in the day. You know, we picked all those great songs that we did from Tongue and Groove, and we just seeded our original music in the middle of that. And then little by little, we would just do more and more and more original music.
Well, that's the trick, right? Is that you've got your covers, mm-hmm, and then you know kind of sneak the stuff,
yeah,
in there. And then slowly one starts to overtake the other. And then when you can get all originals and everyone's still as excited, mm-hmm, you know, yeah, then you're doing something.
Right. So when we do originals without the horns, we're doing like a lot of the Meters and the Neville Brothers,
right,
kind of stuff.
Okay.
So it's very much, you know, we're still staying in that world of funk rock, funky soul rock, you know, blues. And Darian Cunning, of course, really, he's just got all the game in the world with
the
that.
Man.
You know, he's great. He's a great rock guitar player, but he also is great. He's a very soulful singer and writer, you know, so he's,
yeah, his original material is so much different than what you might, depending on what project you've seen him play with in the past, than, mm-hmm, what you might think.
I mean, he's just an extremely well-rounded and really super talent, you know?
Well, and, you know, I mean, in the Chris's, Studebaker and Yonker.
Yes.
The booty shaker.
Yes. That's right.
I mean, it is. It's an awesome crew. It's an awesome crew. So what do you got coming up?
Well, we're going to be at the Acoustic, you know, which is kind of our home away from home. I mean, I've spent many days and nights rehearsing there. It's right in my neighborhood. It's just ultra convenient, and, you know, it's a great place to try out new things. You know, it's kind of like our home base.
I went to open mic last night. Actually, mm-hmm, I had another one of these with Benny from Alpaca Null.
Nice.
And after I left, I was like, okay, kids asleep already. Let's go. Let's go see what it's like. You know what I mean? I didn't play or anything like, mm-hmm, that, but I at least got to just, you know, it's just such a good atmosphere in there.
Yeah.
Just seeing people at like the open mic just trying stuff out.
Yeah.
You always catch, you know,
right,
there's always one, at least one time where you're like, wow, that was something pretty special.
Yeah. I mean, we're not really playing out that much because we are trying to, you know, focus on playing more originals and writing and recording. So we are spending a lot of time doing that right now. You know, I I'm kind of getting more and more selective with playing out because, you know, it's just been a lot of, for me, it's been a lot of years playing, and I don't want to be oversaturated. I don't want to, you know, because after a while, it's like, oh, we'll see her next week. She'll be down the road.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't want to be.
You don't
want
to be too. Yeah. Too. Yeah. You said it. Oversaturated. You don't want to oversaturate the market. No, and that makes sense. And you, like, you know, like you said, you guys are recording right now.
Time. Yeah. So.
Yeah, dude.
So I like to pick my spots now.
And listen, you know, BlackRock's glad to have you back, though. I remember when you moved back from Arizona. Was it six something years ago?
Yep.
Seven years. We didn't know each other. But I knew who you were, and I knew, like, people were just like, oh, Jen Durkin's coming, and then it was like every weekend you were just like, oh, Jen's sitting in with these people now, this is so much fun, you know what I mean? That was, I get wanting to dial that back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I have teenagers at home, and, you know, it's kind of about them.
Right.
You know, which is only fair.
Well, so, yeah, keep an eye out for upcoming Jen Durkin in the Business album.
Yay!
In the process of being recorded. Jen, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. It's Fairfield County Live and Local. I'm John, 95.9 The Fox. We'll see you next time.